It's a Monday edition of Locked On Heat. On today's show, we'll review Miami's last two wins against the 76ers and Wizards and check in on where the Heat stand in the Eastern Conference playoff picture.
The Heat have posted one of the best point differentials in the league over the last few games. We'll talk about that during our mailbag and preview tonight's game in Portland. Now, let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for the Step Back and FanRag Sports, and I write for the Miami Heat's Tip Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Romillo, credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat for SB Nation and AllYouCanHeat.com. I cover the league at large for FanSided and FanRag Sports, and you can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRomillo13.
So on Friday, we posted an interview that we did with Matt Moore of the Action Network, and that was in lieu of a recap of Miami's game against the 76ers. Miami played and beat Philadelphia Thursday night, but we didn't do the recap because we did the interview with Matt Moore instead. And go back and listen to that, because that was a really good conversation about where the Heat stand now and what they're going to be doing going forward this summer and even in the future. But we want to touch on that game a little bit, because Miami's last two games are going to be could end up being very important into what eventually happens in the Eastern Conference playoffs. Miami beat Philadelphia 108-99 on Thursday night, and then on Saturday they beat Washington 129-102. So that was a blowout win over the weekend. Let's start, David, with that game against Philadelphia, though. And the headline there is Hassan Whiteside just outplaying Joel Embiid. Whiteside had 26 points on 9 of 12 shooting. Embiid finished with 17 points on 17 shots. It was his second worst shooting night of the season. And Whiteside, like he did in Miami's previous game against the Sixers, outplayed again Joel Embiid. He was high energy. There was an intensity there. I mean, there was a point even where it looked like Whiteside and Embiid might be throwing hands. So it was
Hassan did throw a hand. He just threw it at his own face.
That's a good point. I mean, but that's the sort. I mean, maybe not hitting himself, but other than that, that's the sort of intensity that we want to see from Whiteside, and sort of the intensity he keeps bringing to the table when the Heat play the Sixers.
Yeah, he was asked about it by the Palm Beach Post, Tom DeAngelo, whether or not he got himself a little bit more excited when facing Joel Embiid. He denied it, but it seems like that's pretty clear that he is using that as motivation to go against Embiid ever since the preseason when they were drawing at each other back and forth. It seems like it's certainly carried over through the regular season, and we'll see. That's an interesting matchup, but on a night like Thursday, Whiteside definitely outplayed the three-year player Embiid. He just seemed much more poised, showed a lot of energy, a lot of enthusiasm, diving for the floor yet again, and was able to lock down Embiid, so that's pretty impressive.
I mean, it's been an exciting matchup so far, and now Miami with that win. Even the season series with the 76ers. Now the tiebreaker, right? It's 2-2 series. The tiebreaker is going to go to whichever of those teams has the better conference record. Philadelphia, at the time of us recording this on a Sunday afternoon, and they play, by the way, tonight, Sunday night versus Brooklyn. So we'll see what happens there. But Philadelphia at the time of us recording this was 21-17 in the East. Miami is 25-18. So Miami's already played more Eastern Conference games and only has one more loss than the 76ers do right now. So I think Miami, as far as this tiebreaker goes with the 76ers, I think it's looking pretty good. They're going to have a good shot at actually owning this tiebreaker when it's all said and done by the end of the regular season. Miami right now also only a half game behind Philadelphia. So there is a shot right now. There's an opportunity that the Heat could catch up to the 76ers by the end of the regular season, and it's really because of the last two games. It is because of the last two games against that team, both of them being wins for Miami. So yeah, they did control the fourth quarter in that game too, by the way. They outscored the Sixers 35-25. They led by 11 with 2 minutes left. I mean, between that and the Washington game, these were two games where Miami seemed to be in control.
Yeah, they got key performances across the board. A number of players stepped up. Dwayne Wade with 16 points. It's a really interesting matchup because obviously Philadelphia has been one of the hotter teams in the league of late, and Miami's just been able to find a solution to them. And I think the key for the games has definitely been Whiteside and outperforming Joel Embiid in both cases. So that's a pretty good showing. And it's also indicative of how Miami is approaching the rest of the regular season. They clearly understand that there's something in place here, that they need to be fighting for something on a regular basis. Each of these games has some kind of significance as they continue to make their playoff push. So they're treating each game with a kind of intensity that you'd think they should have. One of our concerns a couple of weeks ago was that Miami might not understand what's at stake for this team, and they were giving up easy losses to teams like the Lakers in particular. But it seems like they've managed to turn that around. So we wonder, you know, as they go on this three-game West Coast road trip, whether or not they'll be able to maintain that away from home.
These Sixers Heat games, by the way, it did feel like every time you look up, the Heat were playing the Sixers, because they had played like basically this entire series within like the last couple months. But they are fun matchups either way. I enjoyed each one of these games thoroughly, especially the Whiteside versus Embiid thing. And this would be a fun playoff atmosphere, right, between these two teams. That they
sure would.
There's clearly like there are two big guys, like figuratively and literally, don't like each other, so that kind of makes for a fun series. It's doubtful that these guys would play in the playoffs, though. But one team the Heat could play in the playoffs, there is a way where Miami could play Washington in the first round. And Miami took care of business Saturday night versus Washington. Again, 129-102. They blew out the Wizards in this game. They never trailed. They led by as many as 38 points at one point. It was just one of those games where everything seems to be falling for the Heat. Their starting five shot 77% from the field. James Johnson in particular, with Josh Richardson, they both combined for 14 to 15 shooting. Insane efficiency there between two of their bigger players. And eight guys scored in double digits. So nobody really took over, but everybody contributed. And there was a lot of garbage time there too at the end there, which kind of contributed to getting eight guys in double digits. But just another game where Miami just was able to take care of business in a matchup with playoff implications.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's without Hassan Whiteside, who was sat out the game against the Wizards with hip pain. He's going to be traveling with a team on their West Coast road trip, but he might be doubtful to play against Portland. So that's something to keep an eye out for. Bam Adebayo starting in his place. He didn't have a huge game as far as his overall numbers, but he did finish with a plus 19 after, on 6 points on 3 of 5 shooting, grabbed 8 rebounds as well as an assist. So had a nice showing. It was good for the team to be able to get a blowout out under their belt, because it's something that they really haven't shown much of over the course of the season. This isn't a team that's geared for blowout wins, because they just lack the offensive firepower and they play a certain slow pace. This was completely opposite of that. Now, you do have to throw in the caveat that the Wizards were coming off the second night of a back-to-back. So obviously fatigue, obviously still without John Wall as well. So there are a number of factors there that were in Miami's favor. But the point is, Miami's able to capitalize. That hasn't always been the case. Look, they've got a matchup against the Sacramento Kings coming up over the next few games. That's a team that they've dropped 1-2 in the past. So they need to be able to focus and do their job, and they did it against the Wizards. So no knock against Miami, although you do have to understand that it was an easier win given Washington's schedule.
Sure, but and I think if you're a Heat fan, you're looking at the fact that they didn't give up the lead, right? They got out to 38 points, and they didn't win by 38, but they certainly didn't blow the lead at any point either. They really did control that game, and Miami, of course, has had a problem closing out games when they've had big leads in the past. I want to talk a little bit about Justice Winslow, though, because over the last 8 games, he's going nuts. I mean, he is playing by far the best basketball he has of his career. Eric Spoelstra actually said it was the most consistent he's been playing since his rookie season. And I think that's kind of an understatement, because he's being just asked to do more than he was as a rookie at this point.
Absolutely.
He's shooting, over the last 8 games, he's shooting almost 53% from the field, including 52.5% on his threes, and he's averaging 11.9 points per game. I want to look at that three-point shooting a little bit more now, too, because he's been taking more shots from three lately and making a lot of them. But over the course of the season, he's been pretty good. I mean, 37 of 85 from three-point range, so he's shooting 43.5% from three. It's a small sample size, and he's not being asked, like Wayne Ellington, to necessarily take contested threes or anything. A lot of his threes are pretty wide open. Guys still tend to leave him alone a little bit, but it is really reassuring if you're the Heat and you need, and you basically know that Winslow needs to get some sort of three-point shot going. 43.5% is more than what they were probably hoping for, even in the small sample size.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't have a problem with it, to be honest with you, because I just feel like that's Justice finally understanding what his role should be. He's been kind of up and down in the rotation as a backup point guard, coming off the bench, starting. And while he's still coming off the bench now, I think he's finally embracing that. You kind of hinted at the fact that Dwayne Wade's return has probably helped immeasurably. I think there's certainly a confidence boost and a comfort level there for Justice, and it's showed over the last few games. He really feels more comfortable playing this role as a do-it-all player. And I think, you know, one of the things that we keep repeating when it comes to fans' appreciation and limited appreciation, to be honest with you, of Winslow, is that there has such high expectations for him as a potentially top five pick who slipped to number 10. There was the talk, of course, of the Boston Celtics trading away a number of draft picks to acquire him, and Miami kind of balking at that, or at least the Charlotte Hornets balking at that. So, you know, now that he's finally playing this role and thriving in it, I think we just have to appreciate the fact that he may not be a superstar, and that's okay. He's just a really, really good role player who can defend at a high level, score efficiently, finish at the rim when he's feeling comfortable and in rhythm, and that's the kind of player we need him to be. There are enough other scorers on this team where I think he just needs to fill a complementary role, and he's filling that very, very well.
He's playing that Draymond Green role. I mean, I hate to make the comparisons, but I watch a lot of the Warriors and I watch a lot of the Heat, and they do the same thing. They do the same thing. And Justice Winslow, and now look, Winslow doesn't get the assist numbers that Draymond Green does, but Winslow's also not passing the Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, and Kevin Durant. You know? So I think that those assist numbers, look, he's only got 2.4 assists in the last 8 games, but he is handling the ball a lot more. And I feel like that could be inflated if more of those shots. I think a lot of his assists end up being hockey assists, just based on the amount that Miami likes to pass and move the ball. But if those were kickouts to Curry and Klay Thompson, I think that he could be right up there with, you know, 6 or 7 assists a game. But he's doing a great job, and he's playing with a certain swagger that is really great to see. I mean, we saw the dunk against Philadelphia. That was insane. But he is playing with a confidence and a swagger that we just have not seen from Justice Winslow in his NBA career right now, and that's really good to see as well.
He's certainly comfortable shooting from the perimeter too, which is something, even as he was working on his shot, there was always some hesitation from him, but he's already put up 17 attempts through 6 games in March. That outdoes what he did in February, where he shot 13 three-point attempts in 10 games. So he's really shooting a lot more from the perimeter. You can see that when he gets the ball there, he's not hesitating. If he's got any kind of space, he's going to let it fly, and he's knocking him down more often than not. So that's always a positive.
Let's get to our mailbag next, but a quick reminder to subscribe to Locked On NBA. It's the only daily NBA podcast that's less than 30 minutes long and delivers the most important news, scores, and storylines of the day. Perfect to listen to on your morning commute, while you're at the gym, or during your lunch break at work.
And make sure to listen on Tuesdays. Wes and I will be hosting for the rest of the season. To get the latest episode every day, make sure you subscribe on iTunes or on your favorite podcasting app.
All right, we're going to preview Miami's game against Portland later on, but let's get to the mailbag and answer some of your questions. Vic writes in, guys, am I crazy to believe the way the Heat are playing right now that they can beat anyone in the East?
Yes.
Yes, Vic is crazy.
It is crazy.
Why do you say that?
I think we have to be realistic in understanding what this team is capable of. They're playing at a high level. I hate to douse everybody's flame here, but I just think that's the case. I think Miami is playing very well right now, and they're beating up on some inferior competition at times, or they're matching up against a team like Philadelphia where they're getting a little bit extra. I just know that that's going to translate into the playoffs. I think this team, as deep as they are, I'm not sure just yet. I'm not ready to proclaim them as capable of knocking off a Toronto or a Boston or even a Cleveland, to be honest with you. I think they could match up well and make things difficult. I don't know that they're going to be able to get past any of those in the first round series.
I'd say Vic or anybody else would be crazy to expect that the Heat can beat anybody in the East.
Well, I mean,
I have no problem with believing that they could beat anybody. I guess, I don't know. Maybe I'm playing semantics and I'm parsing words here, but believe. Why not? Hashtag believe. Go for it, Vic. I don't care. Look, the way the Heat are playing right now, I'll say this. They're playing the best basketball that they have. And now, look, they're dealing with a couple of injuries, or 3 real injuries here, going as they start this West Coast trip here. But they seem minor between Dwayne Wade, Whiteside, and Justice Winslow. And when they're healthy again, them being at full health, having figured out, it seems, the rotation here now, and playing the way, making shots the way they are, and playing with the confidence they are right now, they they would give anybody in the East a problem the way that they're playing right now. Now, would they do that in the playoffs and over a 7-game series? I don't think so. I think Toronto is still the best team in the East. Cleveland still has LeBron. And I'm with you. I think they can give any of those teams in the East a tough time in a 7-game series. But I wouldn't expect any of those wins. But hell, believe. Why not?
Okay. How about this for a possibility? If they match up, let's say, with either Toronto or Boston and go 7 games in a first-round matchup, would you still view this season as a successful one for Miami, or do they have to get past the first round in order to be seen as a successful team?
So they're in the first round and they push either Boston or Toronto to 7 games. So it's a competitive series here. I think that would be a success. Yeah. But if they end up playing those teams, they would have to be. Yeah. I mean, that would be successful. I think even more successful, obviously, would be getting up higher in the Eastern Conference standings. So maybe that fifth seed, which is still in reach. They're only 2 games behind Washington right now after beating them. So if they can get to that and maybe beat Washington or Indiana in the first round, that would obviously be more ideal to get past the first round. But yeah, if they could beat Toronto or if they could push Toronto or Boston to a 7-game series, that obviously would show that they're pretty good.
It reminds me.
So I think that would
be. So it's kind of like interesting. Like it reminds me of the playoffs a couple seasons ago when they faced off against Charlotte, when they, by virtue of their record and the 4-way tie, were the 3rd best team in the Eastern Conference, and Charlotte was a 6th team, even though they had an identical record, right? You know, they were able to get past Charlotte, but that felt kind of empty. And then they wound up going just 6 games against Toronto in the second round. I mean, would it have been better if they had been able to knock off or take a better team, say a Cleveland, to 7 games rather than beating up on an inferior Charlotte team? I don't know. I'm curious where you stand on that. I think if you're able to match up well with a strong opponent like Toronto, I see, but even Toronto comes with its share of narratives, right? Like if you beat Toronto, it's like, well, Toronto, they fall apart in the playoffs anyway. So you really haven't accomplished anything.
Right.
And then if you beat up on Boston, without Hayward, so it doesn't really matter.
Cleveland is probably the worst roster they've had around LeBron this year. They can't play defense.
Right.
I think as far as that goes, I would say just to me, it wouldn't matter if I would prefer getting further against weaker competition in the postseason than beating or competing with a team like one of the better teams in the East in a 7-game series in the first round. And I only say that because Miami is not going to have their draft pick this year. If they had their draft pick, I'd rather just take the 7-game series against Toronto and have that confidence going into next season. But given that it doesn't matter, I would rather just go further in the playoffs. Our next one comes from Chris, who writes in, and he wrote this in after Miami's win against Philadelphia. The Heat are now only a -1 in their point differential, and they're trending in the right direction. And then I want to add this, that after blowing out Washington, Miami now has a positive point differential for the first time in a very long
season. First time all season, I think, really.
Is it? It's positive at 0.3. It's barely positive. It's basically flat, but it's positive. It's green. And over the last 8 games where Miami's really been going on a run here, going back to that Memphis win, the Heat have the 3rd best point differential in the league and the 2nd best point differential in the East behind Toronto.
Interesting.
And that point differential over the last 8 games is +9. So the Heat are, to Chris's point, trending in the right direction here. Going back to what the way the Heat are playing right now, they're basically playing as well as anybody, is better than anybody in the East other than Toronto.
Yeah, they actually have a higher point differential than the Cleveland Cavaliers. So that's certainly a plus there. I mean, Milwaukee in the 8th seed right now is the only team with a minus point differential in the playoffs, so that's good for Miami. It's a nice statistic. It certainly shows that Miami has played very well of late. But I feel like I should be the one to point out, you know, that it doesn't really mean much if they can't sustain this against worse teams. You know, they have a very difficult schedule, so they've got to be able to make the most of that, and they need to absolutely be able to continue that in the playoffs, whomever they match up with.
Most of those games were at home, and I think a lot of people are viewing those 8 games as kind of a soft schedule, especially when you look at guys like Memphis and Phoenix. But look, Miami beat Philadelphia twice. They beat Washington twice. They beat a Detroit team that was on the edge of the playoff picture at the time and basically put the nail in the coffin for them by beating Detroit. So I think a lot of those games were actually pretty good wins for them. And I do think it's interesting also at this point in the season, especially when you look at the Eastern Conference right now, Toronto and Miami have the best point differentials in the East over the last few games here. And those are sort of the ensemble cast type of teams, the large, the long benches deep teams. And then those other guys like Boston, and look, Boston's been without Kyrie Irving for several games. And Cleveland, who's kind of a one-man show, even after all the trade deadline moves, it's really all still LeBron. Those are the teams that don't, that are still winning games, but not having that point differential like Miami and Toronto have, where they're able to just sort of rely on that deep bench. And again, cool and great for both of those teams right now in the regular, at this point in the regular season. And the interesting thing will be how that translates into the postseason.
Now, can we go so far as to say that Miami has continued to improve throughout the course of the season, that they're playing their best ball of late as they get towards the playoffs? I mean, this is the right time to do it, right? They're healthier, even though they've got these three minor injuries that are kind of going to impact them during their West Coast road trip. But for the most part, they're healthy. They're playing as a cohesive unit. They're getting the most out of everybody. You're getting strong before. Look, James Johnson's performance against the Wizards, he can't be understated. You know, he's a guy who's been criticized by a number of fans. So I think it's been phenomenal to see him have a good game like that. So you want to be able to continue to build on that and kind of get the confidence going, as you know, and I think Spoelstra's doing a hell of a job getting them to focus on a bigger picture.
I agree. And they're going to have to try to continue this, and they're going to do that Monday night, when they're going to play one of the only teams in the league with a better point differential than them, which is the Red Hot Trailblazers. We'll preview that game next. But first, did you know that you can listen to Locked On Heat on your home assistant, like the Amazon Echo or Google Home? Here, I'll show you. Alexa, play the Locked On Heat podcast.
Getting the latest episode of Locked On Heat. Here it is from TuneIn.
It's a hands-free way to listen to the latest episodes of Locked On Heat or any of the other Locked On Podcast Network shows. The Locked On Podcast Network, your team. Every day. The Heat go into Portland playing the Trailblazers. They're winners of 9 straight games. They've won 15 of their last 19. Damian Lillard is playing like an MVP candidate right now. This is going to be one of the tougher games Miami's played this month. And certainly it's going to be one of the tougher games they're going to be playing down the stretch here. And they might have to do it without Dwayne Wade, Hassan Whiteside, or Justice Winslow, all of which, like you said in the last segment, David, dealing with some minor injuries, but will be traveling with the team. Wade dealing with a hamstring injury that he hurt against Washington. Winslow hurt his ankle at the end of that game against the Wizards. Whiteside sat that game out with a hip injury, and it's unclear whether or not he will play, even though they may play later on in the West Coast trip. They're not going to be playing against Portland. But really, when it comes down to it, David, is regardless of who's playing, who's not playing, the Heat need to figure out a way to control Damian Lillard here, who's just been playing out of his mind lately.
I mean, that's easier said than done, obviously. He has been phenomenal. And again, Lillard is such a unique player in that no matter how bad he's playing for the first three quarters, you can't expect him to take that fourth quarter off, because chances are he'll catch fire, because that's just the player he is. Like, I know a lot of it is narrative and hype, but he has played very well in fourth quarters throughout his career. He doesn't mind clutch moments. So Miami and their typical style of play, where they kind of try to build back from a large deficit and slowly chip away at that lead and make things interesting by controlling the pace late in the game, that's not going to work, because Lillard will catch fire, and all of a sudden what could be a 2 or 5 point game will get into a double-digit lead for Portland. That's not going to work again. I mean, Miami's going to have to find some other way. They're going to have to establish themselves early and often and be able to do what they can to limit Lillard, or go the inverse route where they kind of let Lillard get his points and try and shut down everybody else. But there's a danger to that, because Lillard could easily score 40-something points on any given night.
I mean, he's averaging 33.2 points per game over the last 10 games. That's second only behind Anthony Davis.
He's been phenomenal.
Who's been an MVP candidate himself, is literally one, probably top, will finish top three in the MVP race if he keeps this up. You know, I think that Josh Richardson is going to play. It's going to really hurt if Justice Winslow is not able to go. But either way, I could see Richardson spending a lot of time on Damian Lillard because of his length, and Damian Lillard likes to come around those screens and do things like that. And Zach Lowe, in his column late in the week about, you know, his 10 things like that he highlights every week, highlighted Josh Richardson's ability to stick onto guards coming around screens, and specifically bother them from behind. And if he can bother Damian Lillard, stay on that hip and do things like that, just to sort of make things difficult, because he's going to get his. Damian's going to score 28 points at the minimum. It's just making it difficult and not letting those shots come easy, and not letting those shots turn into shots for other teammates. Because outside of Lillard and McCollum, I'm not really worried about anybody else on Portland. Like, Al-Farouq Aminu can shoot as many threes as he wants, and he's been shooting him at a nice clip right now, but I'd rather have that than Damian Lillard even pulling up from 30 feet at this point with the way Lillard is playing right now. I think the other part of Miami's strategy here is just to cut down on those second chance opportunities because of Damian Lillard's ability to just score points and McCollum's ability to score efficiently. Miami doesn't have anybody as good as those two guys as far as just scoring. So I think it's going to take a lot of second chance points on Miami's end to score with the Trailblazers while also limiting what Portland does on the defensive glass. The Trailblazers are second in the league in defensive rebound percentage over the last 10 games. Miami, to their credit, they're seventh in the league in offensive rebound percentage. And now, obviously, that won't be the case if Whiteside isn't able to go. But if he is healthy and able to play, he could be really huge for them as far as just controlling the glass, controlling the rebound margin, and trying to maybe slow the game down or at least just get Miami some second chance points so that they could score with.
Can we get Yusuf Nurkic to talk a little smack about Whiteside over the next few hours?
That would be perfect. That's exactly what we need. Nurkic probably thinks he's better than Whiteside.
I have no doubt whatsoever. I mean, Nurk is, he doesn't lack for confidence, that's for sure. It's going to be difficult. Look, Tyler Johnson trying to limit CJ McCollum, that's going to be a very difficult matchup. McCollum constantly running around screens. It's a hell of a challenge for Tyler. For Goran Dragic, he's got a huge opportunity to try and get some points. Now, look, Damian Lillard, he's not exactly a strong defender, but he's improved. He can strip the ball from you. He doesn't give up much ground because he is strong enough to do so. And Portland's defense in general is much better. I mean, Nurkic is a big part of that, but they've got a number of guys, Ed Davis, Al-Farouq Aminu, et cetera, that can really make an impact defensively. So that's going to be different. It's a lot like how Miami's been playing of late, where they kind of intercept a lot of passes, force a lot of turnovers, things of that sort. They don't have your typical rim protector. Nurkic isn't that guy necessarily, but that doesn't mean that they don't limit opponents scoring wise. So for Goran, he needs to be able to go against that matchup against Little. He needs to be inspired the same way we saw from Whiteside against Embiid. Goran needs to understand that Lillard is one of the top point guards in the league, and he needs to be able to dominate that matchup. He definitely has a size advantage, though not necessarily in quickness. So he just has to be able to find a way, use that iron shoulder, use some of that veteran savvy to create easy points at the rim.
And the ugly secret about Lillard's game is that he's still not an efficient finisher at the rim. And we know that Miami likes to run guys off of the three-point line and funnel them into either Hassan Whiteside or Bam Adebayo or Kelly Olynyk, whoever's manning the center position. And I think that's going to come into play a lot here. You mentioned Tyler Johnson chasing guys around the three-point arc and doing things like that. And this is why, by the way, Damian Lillard has been – you've seen so many highlights of him pulling up from 30 feet deep. So it's because guys are trying to run him off that line. So he's like, well, you can't run me off a line if I'm basically 8 feet behind it. So – we've seen Miami in the past, especially against Washington, sort of pick up a guy like Bradley Beal at full court or at least half court. And you could start seeing that a lot more too. This is where Miami's reputation for just playing opponents really hard and just playing every game at a high level with effort is going to come into play against this one. The other part about this is going to be the ball movement. Miami, like I said, they're not going to be able to go one-on-one with Portland's backcourt. I mean, even if Dwayne Wade's able to go, he's not going to be able to pull up from mid-range over and over again and score with Lillard and McCollum. Miami's going to have good ball movement like they did against Washington, get a lot of different guys involved, might have to have five or six guys score in double figures for this one, for them to pull this one out, because Portland in general has been playing really well. And it's going to take something like that effort against Washington, I think, to pull out.
I'm looking at the last time they matched up. It was a 7-point victory for Portland. Lillard did not have a good night. I know he's certainly been playing better lately, but he just went 5-14 for 18 points, 7-7 at the line. But the scoring came from CJ McCollum, who was 9-16, finished with 28 points, also 7-7 at the line, 3-7 from three-point range. So you've got to be able to do a very good job on both of them. If you limit Lillard, you're going to get burned by McCollum and vice versa. So you've got to do what you can to kind of limit their points collectively, which is easier again said than done.
That game, again, is tonight, Monday night, 10:30 Eastern time on ESPN. So a late game for everybody on the East Coast, but that's all we have for today. We'll be back tomorrow with a recap of that game. You can send mailbag questions and ask about advertising on the show by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. Tweet your questions and comments for our recaps using the hashtag AskLOHeat and support the show by visiting our Patreon page at patreon.com/lockedonheat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.